And talking about these Raptors, of course, we saw earlier in the week that they did not get the Christmas game. Unfortunately, a lot of people were hopeful that it would finally happen this year. And according to some reports, the Raptors pushed pretty hard to get it. But as we know, the NBA has business reasons as to why they decided to keep the Raptors off the Christmas Day schedule. Instead, we get Bucks-Knicks. You know, what a great rivalry that is right now. But in the end, the Raptors do get 15 nationally televised games on ESPN, ABC, TNT, which is obviously great, Emily. But, you know, I wonder, I tweeted out yesterday, do you think Raptors fans would trade all those nationally televised games for one Christmas Day game? Or do you think that 15, which is, you know, the most in like 17 years, do you think that does make up for the non-Christmas Day schedule for the Raptors?
Yeah, I think it makes up for it a little bit, but you do have to kind of look at this Christmas Day snub and think, what do the Raptors have to do to get some Christmas Day prime time here?
So
as much as it's great that they're going to get a few more of those prime time games, this Christmas Day snub seems just, I think, especially when you're looking at the, first of all, the number of games, there's five games, and then looking at who else is actually playing. Like, as you said, we've got the Bucks and the Knicks. I'm not really sure what the whole intrigue there is. Obviously, Greek Freak, everyone wants to see him. But then you've got Portland and Utah, and it's, when you kind of look at that, it's sort of rubbing a little salt in the wounds in terms of, really, the Raptors can't get this Christmas Day game again.
Yeah, it's pretty disappointing from a Raptors perspective, but Cho, what do you think? 15 games make up for that one game?
I think it does, if only because I almost feel like, I mean, we're talking about Bucks and Knicks, right? I think the Knicks are almost the level of playing on Christmas Day that the, if you want to draw an analog to it, maybe that the like the Detroit Lions are playing on Thanksgiving. And I know Thanksgiving is not quite the same here as it is in the States, but I think the Knicks have kind of reached that level. It's like, it wouldn't really feel like Christmas Day to me if the Knicks weren't playing. Having said that, the Knicks are absolutely terrible, and it's hard to want to see, like, Bucks-Raptors. I know everyone was clamoring for Raptors-Spurs on Christmas Day, but yeah. I think even just seeing Giannis versus Kawhi would have been a really cool matchup.
Yeah, and I think in the end, you know, the reason why New York is there is because they are New York. They've had a kind of a Christmas Day staple for them, regardless of the situation of the team. And we know they are, you know, definitely in flux right now. They have Kristaps Porzingis, but, you know, we'll see if he's healthy come the Christmas Day game. But, yeah, the Portland-Utah one stings, I would say, for Raptors fans, because it's two kind of nondescript teams. But I guess the way that they space it out, as far as the time zones go, they need to, you know, put in some West Coast games. But you know, you said, Emily, you know, what do the Raptors need to do at this point? I honestly think they need to win an NBA title. That's really the only way that they're going to be featured on these games, because if it's business related and we know that they don't get the Canadian ratings for having a Canadian team there, then there's going to be no point. They would rather have the viewership from Portland or a Utah or whatever, you know, secondary U.S. market they're looking at. So that seems to be the situation that the Raptors are in. But the fact that they're getting 15 national games, I don't know if it necessarily makes up for that Christmas game, but I think it's, you know, makes a point that, you know, the Raptors are being looked at now with Kawhi Leonard in the fold as a team that, you know, the NBA believes that other people should be watching. I mean, the fact that they have the most since 2001, 2002 is pretty remarkable that it's been that long. The Vince Carter era, you even go back to last year where, you know, they won 59 games, and I think it's this year it's five more nationally televised games than last year. So that's a pretty big jump up for a team that's had quite a bit of changeover with their star players. But in the end, I think if you're a Raptors fan, you're just pretty happy that, you know, that this team is at least on the radar now, as opposed to where it was a few years ago. And you're really scrambling just to get a game on like NBA TV south of the border. And here you are being, you know, shown on TNT and ESPN and the like.
Doesn't it kind of feel like the Raptors could win the NBA final this year? Kawhi could, let's just say the Raptors win and he in theory bolts for like more money or somewhere else, or a team that he could stay for, better weather, whatever, and they could still get snubbed for a Christmas Day game next year. It feels like, I don't want to perpetuate the hurt Raptors fan who, you know, is always, you know, clamoring against the media, but it kind of feels that way at some points.
Yeah, that would be absurd, actually, if the Raptors won an NBA title, Kawhi Leonard bolted, and then they still didn't get the Christmas Day game because, you know, their team was just in shambles after Kawhi left, and they were stuck with all these young guys and not the same team that won the NBA Finals. So, yeah, that's definitely a possibility. I would say it's very unlikely because I don't think anybody truly believes the Raptors can win the NBA Finals. But when it comes to this team, we saw Danny Green the other day say on his podcast, or we heard him say that, you know, he's kind of said this all along, but he feels like there could be something special this year, Emily, with the Toronto Raptors. And, you know, the more I look at this team, and you even add in the Greg Monroe addition, which I don't think I necessarily understand, especially from his perspective, because he's a veteran guy. He could probably get a lot of playing time elsewhere, but you know, there's something about this situation that he likes. But when you look at this team on the whole, you look at where they stand in the power rankings, they're anywhere between, you know, four to, I think I've seen them like seven or eight on one power ranking, which I didn't understand, but they're a top 10 NBA team at this point. And in the Eastern Conference, they're going to be a contender. And I think when you look at the whole, on the whole, and you know what Danny Green says, that there could be something special here, I do buy it because I think this team has a lot of potential.
I totally agree. I know there's been, you know, a bit of change from last year. I'm just really excited to see what kind of chemistry they can come up with this year. They obviously have, they've got the depth. And as you said, with the Monroe signing, I kind of like it. I mean, you raise a good point that maybe I'm not sure why he wanted to come. But I agree that, you know, you're adding depth, you're adding size, kind of like an insurance policy, and it's a 1 year, really no risk. So I like that signing. And then just in terms of the chemistry of the team, yeah, I'm sort of expecting maybe a few, I don't know if you can call them growing pains or something, to start the season just as they kind of hit their stride, because obviously DeMar was just such a big part of that locker room chemistry, just even him and Lowry. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to just seeing kind of what they can do, especially under Nick Nurse. We keep hearing about how much of an offensive brain he is, and we saw it last year, and so now just to see him at the helm of the whole team and what he can do with these guys, I think it's going to be, they're going to be a fun team to watch.
Yeah, I think I can't disagree with that. I think it's always nice to get a fresh voice in the room. I'm excited for the Greg Monroe signing. Obviously the bench mob is better than it has been in past years. I mean, remember when we had like Louis Scola and Chuck Hayes in the bench, right? Now we have Greg Monroe, and I think he, probably the best thing he adds is the rebounding ability, right? I mean, the Raptors got just crushed on the glass all the time last year. It seemed that Jonas was the only person going out there and pulling down boards, and now we have someone else who can do that. I think he's an underrated passer, so I think it'll be exciting to see how he fits into the bench mob, especially with Poeltl now in San Antonio.
Yeah, I totally agree. And if it's sort of one of those cases where it's a guy who's maybe in need of, pardon the pun, but in need of a rebound or something, a rebound year, and then the Raptors being able to help him while also helping themselves with a little bit of depth, then, hey, I think it's a win-win.
Yeah, I think that's really big for the Raptors. And, you know, the depth is still there. The trade that they made, they move out Jakob Poeltl, who is a big part of the bench mob, and DeMar DeRozan, but you bring in a guy like Greg Monroe to take over for Poeltl's spot. You bring in Kawhi Leonard, and you make an addition with Danny Green, so you get some more depth there on the wing. But on the whole, I mean, it looks like there's maybe one or too many cooks in the kitchen as well on the wing. You know, CJ Miles, you got Danny Green, you've got Norman Powell still, the forgotten guy, you've got DeLon Wright, who can play many different positions. You've got OG Anunoby. So, you know, there seems to be a glut of wing players on this team right now. Are you expecting any moves to be made before the season, or do you think that this is the group they're going to roll with? Because, you know, it's always good to have depth. And as soon as you move some guys out, then somebody gets injured, and then you're like, well, I wish we still had that guy. So, you know, what do you think happens here?
Yeah, exactly. I think the team, especially after the departure of DeMar DeRozan, because Emily mentioned it earlier, DeMar was such a huge part of the locker room chemistry, and he was also such a huge part of the, I mean, obviously the rotation. He was a starter certainly for many years, but he was the starting point guard. I mean, who really starts at shooting guard now, right? It could be DeLon Wright. You could have Danny Green slot in there sometimes. I guess you could have CJ Miles or Norman Powell, I suppose. But I guess for that reason, until we see what the team looks like, and I totally agree, Emily, we're going to see some growing pains in the first few games. I think their first three games, I remember reading, are against the Cavaliers, which expect will be a relatively easy game now that LeBron is out of there. But
totally.
Then they're playing the Celtics and Wizards, I think, right, in a back-to-back. And I think that's a relatively challenging start to the season, especially in a back-to-back against those two teams. And the Wizards gave them a bit of a fits last year, right, against John Wall and, I guess, Bradley Beal and so on. So I guess I don't think I would ditch the surplus of wing players yet, but I could totally see Masai and Bobby Webster making some kind of move before the trade deadline this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And you raise a good point. Just with the start of the season, I really like that they're playing Boston so early. And, you know, that's obviously a team that they're going to have to constantly measure up against. So whether it's measuring up your depth and on the wing, as you said, and just really being able to kind of grade their team, that's such a good it's such a good way to, like, A, right at the start of the season, so that you can kind of address maybe any of those kinks in the lineup or the growing pains. So I think it's good that they're kind of facing that adversity right away, really, right out of the gate.
Yeah, and I think that's a team as well in Boston that, you know, they have some roster additions as well, with Gordon Hayward coming back and Kyrie Irving, and you've got all these young guys, of course, but, you know, not that I'm worried necessarily. I don't know if that's the word I would use, but, you know, I think that team might go through some growing pains as well, just because, you know, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, they took such big roles following the loss of Gordon Hayward that, you know, not that they're not going to, you know, be a part of this team, but, you know, are they going to have a little trouble adjusting to their new roles? Because all of a sudden, you know, Jason Tatum can't be that number one, number two option anymore. It's now Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving if they're healthy. So, you know, how are those guys going to adjust to their new roles on the Boston Celtics? But when it comes down to it, the Raptors, the Celtics, the Sixers would, to me, seem to be the top three teams in the Eastern Conference, you know, barring any injuries, of course. And I would even go as far as saying for me that I would have the Raptors ahead of the Celtics. And I know that sounds like hometown bias and, hey, you're from Toronto, so of course you would feel that way, but I think they're right there, to be honest with you. I mean, you added a guy like Kawhi Leonard. You still have Kyle Lowry, who's a perennial all-star. You've got OG Anunoby, he's growing. You've got all this depth, and as great as Boston is, you know, we saw last year, and maybe it changes because they add a Gordon Hayward right now, but their big issue was scoring the basketball, and they really struggled to do that, and I think, you know, their defense was, you know, great, obviously. It was one of the best in the NBA, but I think now, with the way the Raptors could potentially play and the additions they've made, you can make the case that they are the best defensive team in the Eastern Conference.